If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/David McWilliams.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is podcast time. Hope all is well in your world. And it's Halloween, John, almost. Halloween.
It used to be my favorite time of the year.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And you'd spend weeks gathering all the bonfire material together.
I know.
And then all the lads from the farm in Rockford would come down and take it all.
Exactly. But you're sitting there, don't take our bonfire. Yeah, no, it's funny. They were really good days, really, really good days. Just the smell of Halloween, lighter fuel and bangers.
That's right. Sparklers.
And bangers and all. But actual fact, speaking of our youth, I was in a bar last night. I'm feeling a little bit ropey.
Well, I was going to say, you have that look about you.
Yeah. I was led astray. Speaking of our youth, I was in a bar that you and I had our first pint in.
Oh?
The Lord Edward.
The Lord Edward.
Do you remember another bar in the right
by Christchurch?
Exactly. Gorgeous little bar. They served us when we were about 15.
That's right. Yeah.
And we went in. I said, I swear to God.
That's when we were connoisseurs of Guinness. Go, this is a fine pint.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no notion.
Do you know that in Guinness, people actually tap a coin in Guinness? What's that about?
What?
Our lads do that. They get a pint and they tap a coin, and as if it's a certain dullness of the sound.
What?
The pint is ready. You ever seen that?
Never heard that before.
That's something. Anyway, I was in the Lord Edward. I thought it was a real... Great boozer. I was at Lucy's gig in Vicarstown, which went really well. And then we came out and just decided to go for one there. And I just remember, it's such a lovely pub. It really, really is. And we were annoyed.
It's still got that smell. Do you know, I always thought it was really interesting when they banned smoking in pubs. The problem for a lot of the old pubs
was the smell of the humans.
The smoke used to mask
the smell of humanity. Exactly.
Piss and damp and all sorts.
It's great, but I've made the fatal error of doing the speed drinking as you get.
Stop, Mac. You're too old for that.
I know. It's kind of like, give me another pint. Anyway, so I'm feeling a bit ropey, but it did bring back memories of our youth going around. John and I used to go around town. It's quite amazing. Like, we'd get the 46A into town and see where we could get served, and we'd have a fiver between the two of us.
In change.
And we'd kind of meander up into parts of the town that we'd never been before. And back then, being up in the Lord Edward was really like going into the outer limits for us.
Yeah. We were fierce adventurous, actually.
We were. We were 13 or 14.
Yeah, it would have been...
Very young. Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. You can all, if you're listening, you can reminisce on your... What were you doing as a 13 or 14-year-old? What sort of places were you hanging out? Not telling your ma, of course.
What have you been reading this week?
I tell you what I've been reading. I'm worried about money and inflation at the moment.
Get it off your chest, Mark. I will
get it off my chest. And we will talk about inflation because there's a significant cleavage emerging in economics and financial markets and policy making and everything about whether inflation is coming back. And if it is coming back, what does it mean for the world? But I was reading something about the origins. You know, I like the origins, right?
Indeed.
Getting back to the source. And this actually is really for JM, because JM's daughter was born 6 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And her name is Maya.
She's gorgeous.
She is absolutely gorgeous. Tiny little thing. And her name is Maya. And then I was going back to the gods, the Greek gods, or the myths, because I'm interested in this carry on. Yeah. And who was Maya? And Maya was the cousin of Apollo, right? And she was an extraordinary sort of creature, a goddess. But she is the mother of the last of the Olympian gods, who is Hermes. Okay.
Right.
And Hermes is the god of money. So the Greeks had a god.
The god of money.
Yeah. So this is the fascinating thing.
Right.
And also, interestingly, it was the last god. So Zeus is sitting up in Mount Olympus, overlooking the family. Like, yeah, he's the Tony Soprano of gods, okay? And he's hanging out, right? And his Mrs. Hestia is the sort of matriarch, but he's always playing away. Zeus,
he's like a dog, wasn't he?
He was a pretty, yeah, right. And he says, we need one last god. We have 11 gods, they need 12. And it's interesting why the figure 12 is so essential in ancient history. So 12 apostles, 12 gods, all this sort of thing.
12 months 12 of the year.
Right. We can come back to that as well, because it's one of those numbers that's divisible by 2, by 6, by 3, by 4.
Yeah.
So it's a very useful number.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, I digress in my little numbers thing. But so he says, we need a god. It's interesting that the last god they introduced is the god of money. And this is taken by a lot of ancient historians and classicists as the beginning of money encroaching on Greek civilization.
Right.
So if you look at the difference between, for example, Greek philosophy, which is about 400 AD, emerges 400 or 500 AD, and then the Homeric classics of the Iliad and the Odyssey, which is older, right? The way in which the Greeks think changes in that 200 years, and they become much more rational, much more logical, much more proof-based. I happen to believe, it's not my own theory, I've read it a lot, but I think it makes sense, that the introduction of money changed the way the Greeks thought. And you can't have Greek philosophy without money. So this was interesting.
Right,
so, and so Hermes is the Greek god of money.
And he was the dude with the little wings on his feet.
Yeah, and the reason they put wings on his feet, because they were trying to understand how quick money moves. That's what it was. It was
the velocity of money.
This is the whole idea, was just that money changes the pace of life, right?
Right, okay.
So this is a lot of the stuff with the wings and everything. It's actually much more profound than you just think some geese are flying around the place, right? And
that's
it's the swiftness of thought that Hermes has. Now, Hermes then becomes, the Romans inherit the Greek gods, but they change the names in most cases. And Hermes becomes Mercury. And Mercury is the Roman god of money. And it's right down to our, like, if you think of the word commerce, right?
Yeah.
The English word commerce means com merx, with Mercury. So it's really deep. Like, all this stuff is really, really deep.
That's excellent.
And I'm looking at Pompeii, and I'm looking at, because Pompeii is the great example we have of a day in the life of a Roman city that was stopped.
Yeah.
And the extraordinary commerce that was going on there. So commerce is with Mercury. And from that, you get the word mercurial. When something's mercurial, it's slippery. And money is slippery. You know, ask anybody who's lost money. Sometimes you have it, and then it's gone. So where the fuck did that go?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and so money is mercurial, and it's that idea that it seeps into every part of society. And this is what interests me, because right now, John, there is a significant debate. Economics only gets interested in money when money goes bad.
Right.
When inflation emerges.
Yeah.
But I think actually, and the course, that the online course is all about the other properties of money. So economics only gets worried about is inflation going up? Is it going down? Right. Mm. But I'm much more interested in money when it's not going bad, when it's going well, and how it changes our minds and how it changes the way we think about the world.
Right.
But in actual fact, economists and the global economy and financial markets right now are only worried about one question, which is whether inflation is coming back. And that's what I want to discuss in the next few minutes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But Mike, like, where inflation seems to be happening most, or it's most obvious now, is in the whole energy.
Yes.
Side of things, you know. And what I can't quite work out is how much of the energy crisis is caused by manipulation, deliberate manipulation on part of OPEC and Putin and the like, and how much is real, is natural.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting question. I was filling up my vehicle. I think I'm the
only scooter.
Person, 13 euros to fill it up.
Wow. That's okay. Great.
I was filling it up on Tuesday night. I was coming back from soccer. I was coming back from pathetic Owlad soccer. And I realized that the vehicle was out of juice. So I stopped on the Stillorgan Road and I filled it up and it was 13 euros. Now.
And that would keep you going for
weeks.
Yeah.
For weeks. That's
brilliant.
Great.
Brilliant.
But I thought to myself, that's a bit expensive. Because it was used to only cost about 10 euros to fill up, right?
Yeah.
Not that long ago. So what we've seen is a massive, massive increase in the price of base energy, right? I'll give you a few statistics, okay? Gas prices, natural gas, which is a foundational price for lots and lots of energy, okay? Mm. Off which lots and other prices are based, right? Has surged by 600% since last year. Price of natural
600?
Gas, right?
Wow.
Right? Prices currently stand at about 87 euros per megawatt compared to 14 euros per megawatt this time last year in gas, right? The UK itself experienced a 37% spike in gas prices in just one 24-hour period last week. Last week.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing is some extraordinary changes in energy prices, right? Now, there's a variety of reasons for this, but those reasons won't necessarily go away. Now, the reason this feeds into inflation is a thing called cost push inflation. So when the cost goes up of something as foundational as energy, that pushes up the price of everything else around it, right? Because the one thing that is absolutely critical for modern humanity is energy.
Yeah.
When you have energy, you have molecular movement. When you have movement, you have exciting things happen, right?
Yeah, so if
the cost of energy goes up, we have a serious problem. So that's the first thing. Now, the question then is, why is all this happening? And how does it feed into the greater inflation issue? The reason that gas is going up is because, one, our pipelines, Europe's pipelines to Russia go through the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And the Russians are not that happy with their gas going through the Ukraine. So the Russians are squeezing us and they're not giving us enough. That's pushing up the price. That's number one. Number two, the other source of gas is Qatar.
Yes.
Qatar is, and I was thinking, Callum Robinson scored a hat-trick.
Yes,
against Qatar, right? Okay, and the thing is, why? What is happening, right? And what is happening is there's this thing called liquid nitrate gas, which comes from Qatar. It's in bottles, right? Mm. And of course, the reason this has increased in prices is the price of shipping has gone up dramatically.
Yes.
Because of all the bottlenecks. You remember that thing that happened in the Suez Canal? All that sort of stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you have the Russians on the one hand squeezing, right? The Qataris, on the other hand, increasing the price of transport, okay? Pushing up the price of getting the gas from A to B. But also, of course, you have this extraordinary increase in demand from China, right? China is, this is an amazing statistic. Every year, China is adding the demand of a Belgium and a Netherlands put together.
Wow.
Right? And the Netherlands brings us to the fact, the Dutch, yeah, and the Dutch are the biggest producers of gas in Europe. They have gas fields off the North Sea.
Yeah.
And they're reducing them dramatically because of minor earthquakes in the North Sea, which the Dutch are worried about will release gas into the environment. So you have this kind of perfect storm. Yeah, like little small tremors, right?
Yeah.
That happened over the last 8 or 9 months, right? So the Dutch are cutting back.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
The Qataris are expanding, but the cost of transport is going through the roof.
Yeah.
And of course, the Russians are squeezing us. And why do the Russians want to squeeze us? Because the Russians want to make sure that we build this. Have you heard about this North Pipeline going between, which basically goes through the Baltic? So what it's the geopolitics of it. The Russians are trying to screw the Ukrainians, right? Because the Ukrainians take a fee for every piece of gas that goes through, every cubic meter that goes through their area. They're saying, but in order to do that, they have to accelerate this pipeline going from Russia to Germany, directly to Germany.
Yeah.
As we've said before, Germany is a bit like Japan, is an extraordinary superpower of manufacturing that doesn't have any energy sources.
Yeah, it doesn't have its own
coal,
source.
That's about it. But then, and they can't survive on coal, and it also doesn't. Yeah. So what you're
saying, they become over-reliant on Russia.
They're completely reliant on Russia.
And and with the character that Putin is, you know, it's a dangerous game.
Well, it's just...
And it's the one thing that I agreed with Trump on was Germans should not depend so much on Russia.
Well, I mean, we can go all the way back to Catherine the Great. Catherine the Great was German. We forget that the most amazing Russian empress was German.
Yeah.
And the great, if you want to talk real geopolitics, the Atlantis' big fear. So the Atlantis is basically the Americans and the Brits, right? West European worldview. Their biggest fear was always an alliance between Russia and Germany. And every single piece of British and American statecraft, particularly through the Victorian ages and into this year, this time, to keep the Russians and the Germans apart. Because it's the most natural alliance. The Russians have no industry and loads of energy.
Yes.
And the Germans have no energy and loads of industry. So it makes complete sense for those two countries to be allied. And that's why when Ribbentrop and Molotov had their alliance in 1939, that was the one that really, when Stalin and Hitler said, do you know what, we're on the same side.
Yeah.
Which they did for a few months.
Yeah, right?
Carved up Poland. That was the one that really freaked out the West, because suddenly you have these two superpowers together in the European landmass. But we digress. We digress. Come back to inflation. So therefore, in the inflation argument are two camps. One is that, don't worry, it's all transitory. This is all about the fact that the economy is just recovering from the pandemic.
Yeah.
There is no real ability of pricing power to push up prices profoundly, and it'll all settle down.
Yeah. We've been kind of taking that
view. And I suppose it's also, that's quite ideological. That's a slightly centrist, maybe left of center view. Yeah. Not left of center, but more.
A bit of wishful thinking in there.
It's more because in order for Joe Biden and other people who believe that inequality is too great, and other people who believe that public investment is going to help people, and people who believe that public infrastructure is important, public housing, all that stuff that I believe in, you don't want to be ambushed or mugged by inflation. So the big fear is that those great projects, those big visionary projects, which will use the bond market to fix things, and we can do things, and there's not just a problem of money, there's a problem of vision. That idea will get mugged by inflation if inflation comes through, because what will happen is the central banks will react to inflation by jacking up interest rates, driving up the cost of dreams and visions.
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly those visions smash into the reality of more expensive money. That is why people of my bent are kind of biased towards, I mean, we all got biases. Don't worry, it'll be transitory, right? On the other hand, you have the more right-wing view, the less status view, the more view that was prevailed over the last 40 years all over the West, which is that inflation and the threat of inflation is just around the corner. The central bank is behind the curve. The Fed is facilitating this. And very, very soon, what you will find is that expectations of inflation will rise. And as expectations of inflation rise, you will go from manageable low rates of inflation to moderate rates of inflation, and then suddenly surge to hyperinflation.
Yeah.
Right? So it's probably worth us teasing out these.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So are you saying then that the upshots, depending on which camp you're in, the crucial factor is what the next move for the Fed or the ECB is?
Yeah.
Are they going to increase
interest rates?
And if so, what will that mean?
Well, recessions are always the wages of inflation. You know that biblical expression that the wages...
It's certainly Paul McCulley now.
The wages of sin is death, right? Yeah. I think I probably robbed that from Paul, right? But basically, recessions are always the payback time for inflation. So if you think about the following, right? What happens is the economy starts to grow quickly, right? We all get giddy. Supply starts to contract. It doesn't react fast enough. Demand increases. Price pressures come through. Wages begin to rise, rents begin to rise, energy prices begin to rise, and we have inflation, right? Then what happens is the central banks, and during that inflation, there will always and ever be an increase in debt, because debt is simply the belief in a better tomorrow. So if you imagine this, right?
Yes.
People take out debt because they think, you know what, I'll be able to pay it all back. So if the economy is going well and everyone's going rah, rah, and the rate of unemployment falls and people are feeling good about themselves, then they start taking on more and more debt and they don't look at the interest rate. They say, don't worry about the interest rate. It's low. Yeah. It's going to be low permanently. Right. So this is why recessions are the wages of inflation. So inflation rises. So the payback then is the central banks say, whoa, we've got to increase interest rates. Why? Because we've got to drive the demand for money down.
Yeah.
We've got to make borrowing more expensive. We've got to cut down on debts. And ultimately, we've got to, it's this idea, you know, of the accelerator and the brake.
Yeah.
So we've got to put the brakes on, right? Well, the problem with the way you put the brakes on, you raise interest rates. Now, rising interest rates can have disastrous consequences for heavily indebted countries.
Yeah.
And the problem with the world now is we are heavily indebted. Right? There's lots and lots of debt. And so
that's because I've been, you know, printing money and dishing it out gooddo for
the last while. The thing is that, you know, the interesting thing about printing money is you never print money. It's a balance sheet. So there's always a debt corresponding to every dollar that is printed, at least in the non-MMT worldview.
Yes.
Which we talk about the traditional worldview, right? So ultimately, how this impacts on all of us is that interest rates rise, defaults rise. When defaults rise, people get hurt. Balance sheets get broken. We were in a massive balance sheet recession from 2008 to 2014, right?
Yeah.
That can happen again, but it'll be different balance sheets that will actually be destroyed. Now, what you find, therefore, is that the central banks are kind of in a hole because they're kind of damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, right? If they don't do anything, and this transitory inflation becomes permanent, then what you have is this next idea of inflation, which is that the first idea of inflation is that inflation happens because the supply in the economy doesn't react as quickly to demand and you get price rises.
Yeah, yeah.
But then these price rises, so for example, people say, well, you know what? Having inflation of 4 or 5%, 5 or 6% for a couple of years is no big deal. And they're right, actually. You know, we do need probably bits of inflation in various different parts of the economy, right? I don't think always and everywhere inflation is a problem. Then what happens, though, is if people get used to it, a thing called inflation expectations kick in. That people think, okay, inflation's running 5 or 6%, so therefore I'm going to go for 10% wage increases, right?
Right, okay.
Because I've got to compensate from the fact that my real wage is falling. If inflation is rising at 5% and your actual wages are going up at 2%, you're losing a net 3% every year. So your real wage is actually diminishing.
Yeah.
So what happens is that people say, well, screw this. My expectations are going to be that inflation is going to be 10% next year, 15%, 20%, and that's what I want. So the way in which you see hyperinflation emerging, you know, our image is Germans with, you know, wheelbarrows, Deutschmarks buying loaves of bread, right?
Or in Zimbabwe.
Or, you know, anywhere where there's been hyperinflation, Venezuela at the moment, right? Turkey at the moment. Turkey's got very close to hyperinflation. Yeah.
Jeez.
They're having inflation 20-30% per year. Argentina, all these countries, right? Is that the purchasing power of the currency collapses.
Yeah.
People then choose to abandon that currency and go into more stable assets, be they dollars or be they gold or Bitcoin or something like this, right?
Yeah.
So you get this kind of monetary whammy. So how it impacts on the average person is that why money is critical in the economy is that inflation is a psychological, not a monetary concept. That if your monetary base becomes unstable and people cannot manage their world around stable money, it leads to complete chaos, right? Because we forget that stable money is elemental to everything we do. If you don't...
It allows you to plan.
It allows you to trade. But, it allows you to do...
But not only is stable currency important, but like if that becomes unstable, then it's a whole systematic thing begins to crumble.
And this is where we get back to this idea that economics is a complex adaptive system. Right?
Yeah.
That everything is dependent on everything else. But at the fundamental basis of monetary economics is money, right? And the fundamental promise of money is security around which you can organize society.
Yeah.
I think money is the most extraordinary bottom-up technology that's allowed us to organize society. So then you see what happens to societies that go from low inflation to moderate inflation. Lots of people say, don't worry, it's going to transitory, it'll be okay. And that morphs into fear about the future, that morphs into hyperinflation. And suddenly you're in a situation like a country like Turkey, because Venezuela is an extreme example, right? A country like Turkey is a country where, I'll give you an example, the lira to the dollar is now, it was when I first went to Turkey, not first, I went to Turkey about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, it was 1 lira 60 to the dollar.
Yes.
It's now 9 liras to the dollar. So the currency is collapsing.
What has happened there?
Well, what has basically happened is exactly this, that Erdogan has tried to keep a growth miracle going. So in the first part of Erdogan's premiership, it was actually an amazing growth period for Turkey, right?
Yeah.
But what they've tried to do is they've tried to... So we come back to the idea of inflation, the recession being the wages of inflation. So Turkey grows very, very quickly, has a massive current account deficit. So it's absorbing in. Turks are spending like hell, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're absorbing in capital. They're going into debt, going into more and more and more debt, right? Qatar, our friends, are actually financing a huge amount of the current account deficit, right?
Yeah.
And that's for geostrategic reasons, right? Because Qatar need Turkey because Turkey needs Qatar. So Turkey needs Qatar for money and Qatar needs Turkey for influence.
Yeah.
Because Turkey's a huge country. It's a massive power, right? But all the while, the currency is getting more and more undervalued and are losing its value. And the reason it's losing its values is because if you're running a huge current account deficit you're actually demanding foreign currency more than your own currency. So foreign currency's price goes up, is the dollar, and your own currency's price goes down.
Okay.
So that's actually what's happening. But that was a slow process, very manageable up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It's now getting out of control. And very, very hard.
And to do with COVID there?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just to do with endemic poor management on the part of Erdogan. It keeps firing. I think they fire their central bank chief again this week. They do that all the time.
Right.
And I think the Turks will end up having currency reform. They'll have a new lira. I think
they also spent a huge amount on, I know actually Erdogan went on a big building spree of mosques around Turkey, but they also spent a huge amount on the military, getting involved in Libya and
everywhere.
In Syria and the whole lot.
Well, it's a huge country.
Yeah.
And it's a massive military. But I mean, what I'm saying is Turkey is an example of a country that went from a pretty manageable, good situation to a pretty close to hyperinflation situation, right? And of course, what happens is when the economy cannot produce the goods that people want, they import them. And the more goods you import, the more pressure on your currency.
Yeah.
So you end up, the Turkey begins to resemble something like Argentina, which inflation expectations are so deeply ingrained that in Argentina, you can't buy a house for pesos. You can only buy it for dollars. So everything is priced in a foreign currency.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the result of many decades of inflation. So the question then is, would it be possible for a large country like the United States to experience an inflationary surge, right? And if that inflationary surge is so significant, what will be the long-term consequences? Well, now, we do have a model for this.
Right.
It's the transition from the 1970s to the 1980s. So in the 1970s, American inflation, actually inflation all over the world, the Western world, increased quite dramatically.
Yeah.
Largely sparked by the Israeli-Arab war in 73 and OPEC's reaction, jacking up prices. Yeah. Right? But we're having OPEC-style energy price increases right now without a war. So this is what we have to be quite aware of.
Right.
Right. Those increases in gas prices are real. Right. What happened then was the Carter administration got itself embroiled in what they call stagflation, which is what we really don't want, which is when the economy slows and prices rise at the same time. So it's a stagnation plus inflation at the same time. Reagan gets into power in 1980. He gets this guy, Paul Volcker, who the central bank chief. And Paul Volcker says, okay, the only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to rinse this inflation out of the system. How does he do it? He jacks up interest rates. How high do American interest rates go? 20%.
Really?
American Fed funds rates were at 20% in 1981.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And they destroyed inflation, but they also destroyed the economy.
Yeah.
So they precipitated a massive recession. All your Bruce Springsteen stuff, The River and all that stuff was all written at that time.
Yeah.
When large American industries that had been based largely on debts and had been based on, it'll be fine and we'll increase prices and la, 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 totally collapsed. So we have a model in our heads, and it's not that long ago, right? For you and I.
Yeah.
For the younger listeners, it's actually ancient history.
I remember well. Jesus.
Yeah. But we precipitated a huge, huge recession based on destroying inflation, which the recession was the wages of the previous inflation. Could that happen again? Yes, everything can happen again, right? Do I want to happen again? Of course not. But could we be on the cusp of some hyperinflationary burst in certain countries that we never imagined possible? Absolutely. And the model is the 1970s, and the consequences are the early 80s and a recession in the United States. Unemployment hit 15, 16, 17%.
Yeah.
And the society was badly, badly corroded by that. That could happen again.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is hardly a stable currency.
No, but it's, for a lot of Bitcoin believers, it's an alternative to paper money. And that belief that you need an alternative has been heightened in recent years as we keep printing money.
Yeah.
So on Thursday, we've got Max Keiser here, and we're going to talk to him all about Bitcoin. Now, with all that talk about money and hyperinflation, just before you go, don't forget the online course, which is Money and International Trade. It's everything that we were talking about. It's the theories, it's the practice, it's the history, it's the future. It's all that good stuff. And it's all on patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.